You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
That stadium is going to be rocking, and heaven help whoever walks in there to play us.
Sustained effort and violence, you play your ass off.
You're watching the Pirate Preview on the Sports Objective. Join us every Tuesday night on YouTube Live as we're joined by beat writers and other media members as we take a look at what lies ahead for the Pirates. Now, here are the guys.
It is a first down. Pirates.
Welcome in to the Pirate Preview with Pirates Taking All Houston Senior Day. On Saturday at 2 p.m., Bubba, very excited to have our guest back, one of our favorites. Even though, I mean, I know he's University of Houston, but he's one of ours.
Yeah, obviously always excited to talk East Carolina Houston. I'm with this guy, and welcome back in from the Cougar Radio Network, Ted Pardee. Ted, we appreciate your time.
Awesome. No, Bubba, you and Dave are the best. I appreciate you guys asking me to be on. Love catching up with you guys. Love doing our preseason stuff. And hey, we've been thinking about this one now, guys. Who would have thunk 2-6-4 teams matching it up, huh? Crazy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You're going to tailgate with us right before you go on the air?
If I can get over there, you know I will, Dave. You know I will.
Yeah, I'm right near the practice field, not too far from you, so it's a walk across a quick parking lot. Right, Bubba? I guess he's having some difficulties there. But, Ted, welcome.
Bubba's just speechless. He's like,
yeah, exactly.
Come on. Best tailgating in all of Greenville. Come on. Of course we know that, right?
That's right. And you guys, we've improved from the double wide in the sky, as Terry Holland used to say, a former athlete director, when it comes to the press box. So working really hard. And we were talking pre-show, but you guys have done a tremendous job with upgraded facilities, something we're working on right now with Pirates Unite. I was showing you about that $60 million campaign for Pirate fans that they know about it. But an indoor practice facility, upgrades to the baseball. We've got luxury boxes there for baseball. It's going to be really cool. Plus upgrades to Minji's Williams Arena for basketball. So a lot of cool things. They've have a guess like an auxiliary weight room, if you will, for the Olympic sports and for baseball. And so a lot of effort. That fact, that's almost completed. Right, it's right adjacent, right near the baseball field. So at Clark Eclair. But anyway, we've been working really hard on that. And now you guys, and I also read an article about it's for Cincinnati. You know, Dustin Hoffman said it takes 10 years to become an overnight success, and Cincinnati worked 10 years. I read an article about them, about their facilities and all that, on how long you guys took at Houston. But in other words, this stuff, people don't realize with fundraising and all the blueprints and all the plans and everything, it takes time to make this happen. It's not something that's done overnight to raise the money, and then you've got to build it too. And you know how there's always snags and delays for this or that with construction.
It's the truth. You know, we've talked a lot about this. I love the stadium. I love what, you know, I remember back before the Boneyard, before the end zone was there. So I'm an old, exactly in the picture in the background there. So, you know, so I love the luxury suites, the press box area. That's incredible. You guys have really done a great job of upgrading. The stadium's awesome. Stadium's fantastic. You know, at Houston, we had to make some tough calls because we were sort of, you know, we were stuck in a rut. We were in the Southwest Conference. We didn't get included in the Big 12. We go to Conference USA with the rest of, you know, with you guys and a bunch of guys. And we felt like we were kind of, we were like a boat without a rudder. You know, we were just kind of listing around. We had some great leadership, but it really, I got to give a lot of the credit to the current leadership that's been in place for a long time, starting with Chancellor Renu Kattur. She is amazing. She supports athletics so much. She loves our university. And so she's the sort of the spark. And then from the spark, we've got other great leaders in the university, like Tillman Fertitta, who's our chairman of the Board of Regents. Now Tillman went to Texas Tech University. But he lives in Houston. He's always lived in Houston, and he's been really supportive of the program. When I was in school, he was a supporter of the program. he became the owner of the Houston Rockets. You know, he owns the Landry's Restaurant Group. He's an incredibly influential guy, but you can't make that one guy foot the bill for everything, right? So he's one person who helps motivate others to give. And so we started with our football stadium. We had to build a brand new one. The old stadium was built in the 1920s, and it was an old concrete monster that just wasn't, it was not applicable to what we have today. We built the new stadium. That was the first peg in sort of the process. We built an indoor facility for our basketball or for our football team, a full 100-yard indoor facility with another side 50-yard turf fields for the offensive line. So that was like phase two. Phase three was renovating our basketball arena. So Hoffines Pavilion was a historic building in Houston. And, you know, Fi Slam Jam and all that stuff from the old days.
Oh, yeah.
But we raised the money. Then the new sort of, they basically gutted the whole building and rebuilt it from the ground up. And it's amazing. It's an incredible facility to watch about. It's sold out season tickets. You know, it's a great place to go watch a game. And so then that was the next step today. And that helped us get to where we needed to be with the basketball program. You know, we have a top 10 basketball program right now, top five program. With a Final Four appearance last year. And then you look at the football program last year, you know, having a one loss season was a great deal. This season's been a little bit tough, but the Cougs are always going to be kind of cyclical like that. That happens. Big picture, Cougars are going to the Big 12 next year. And now again, like you mentioned, Dave, you have to do these capital campaigns. Houston is doing another one. We're doing the Rise Rise to Big 12 campaign. And it's a $150 million fundraise that we're doing to build an end zone facility. So in our end zone, we have sort of an open area so you can see downtown. It's really pretty. But then the football indoor facility is right there. So what we're going to do is we're going to close that in and build a brand new football only facility back there behind the in the end zone. That'll have state-of-the-art weight room. It'll have other facilities that are important for sort of getting up to the Big 12. And giving your student athletes or your football team the opportunity to perform at their best. And then we'll exit our old facility, which is kind of across the street. And then the rest of the sports can take that over and renovate that as well. So it'll improve that. It'll improve all the Olympic sports and all the other sports, as well as what the university is offering us for the football team. So sorry, long story, but it's kind of a never-ending process. I hate to say it, but you got to continue to compete and you got to elevate your game. Otherwise, you get left behind.
Yeah, and I was telling people that it really needs to be instead of 60, only 60 million, like $100 million campaign to keep up. But also,
well, 60 gets you started, right? 60 yeah. gets you going, and then you get people excited, and then you start winning championships. And, you know, you guys have, again, great history at East Carolina, and I think, you know, you just got to tap into that passion. Into that ECU fan passion.
No doubt. And one thing you told us about, and I've told, and in fact, we told the people at the Pirate Club about you and about the indoor practice facility is used for tailgating indoors, right? You told us that.
Absolutely. You know, in Houston, it gets so hot in September.
Yeah.
You guys know it gets pretty hot. I mean, look, let's just admit we all live in the South and it's warm. You know, you start going to those football games in September, even here in Houston in October. And what you want to do is you want to create an environment for your fans. Sure, there's tailgating out in the parking lot. People love it. You know, all around the stadium. It's just like y'all, you know, we all have the same experience. But, you know, you're going to have some fans that might want to get a little bit of air conditioning. They want to get a little relief for their little kids. So in the indoor facility, they'll put the inflatables in one end and have little, you know, ring toss and football toss and all that stuff for the kids. And then they'll set up a couple of, you know, couple of bars or stations there for folks to, you know, get you a cold drink if you want to before the game, relax, and you're in, you know, it's 68 degrees, right? I mean, it's like the perfect situation. Then you head out from there, walk, you know, literally walk up, you know, across the street, and you're in the stadium.
Bubba, can you pony that up? I'm trying really hard to get that 60 million. I mean, I know.
If I could, I would.
I'll tell you one thing, the Rose. Well,
I would love to be East Carolina's T-Boone Pickens.
Yeah, if the Rosenbaums were wealthy, there's no question that we would be light years ahead of where we are. They're some of the best, not only best people, and I'm not just saying that because Bubba's a part of the show, but They're really I'm serious. It's mom and dad, and they're good people. You want to talk about fans? They travel everywhere. People complain about start times and this, that, and the other. The Rosenbaums will be traveling.
Not the Rosenbaums.
Yeah, we were at Nippert last Friday night. What a heartbreaker that was! And we'll certainly talk some football here in a moment.
Yeah, before we talk football too, and I hate to bring it up, but Bubba and I were going to talk about the tragedy yesterday, about obviously the Marshall tragedy, because we have a tie to that, being November 14th, 1970. Yes. And after the, you know, Marshall plays us as the plane crash and some great thing. It's an unusual kind of tie bond that we have. Anyway, we've had players to talk about it, so we're going to talk about that. And then I want to get your take as a former football player about the UVA situation. We talked about it last night on our show, but just from a former football player, the big time that you were, you guys, in the old days of the Southwestern Conference. But talk about that, about UVA. I just can't imagine a former football player killing a three.
Former teammates. I'm so saddened by it, and I think we all are. Football is a big extended family, is the way that I've always felt about it. You know, I grew up, you guys know, we've talked about my dad, and, you know, and I grew up in football, and my kids are in football, and, you know, I've got a son who's a coach in the XFL, and I got another kid who's he plays at TCU. He's having a heck of a run this year.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, but that's what football is. Sure, we love our team, but we also can respect our opponents. We can respect our teammates, I have to believe that this is a tragedy that's because of mental illness. It's not because people will say all kinds of things, but the truth is, you know, we have to care for our student athletes as humans and as people, and we have to do a good job of identifying medical problems, including mental illness. I think people overlook mental illness because it's so difficult to identify, and so it's an easy thing for people to ignore. And or to say that other reasons are why it happened. And I'm to my best friends in my life today are my friends that I played football with, the guys that, you know, we're all a bunch of 53, 54 year old men. Now we're old guys, gray hair, all this stuff. But you know what? I can go. Houston played Memphis, and Andre Ware was calling the game for ESPN, and Chris Pesman, our athletic director, came up, and the three of us gave, you know, big, but we're all brothers, you know. I mean, we played together, we sweated together, we cried together, we won games, we lost games together. How could you hurt a teammate? How could you do that to a teammate? Even if you don't like your teammate, you know what? Doesn't matter, because guess what? Time moves on, and then guess what? Yeah, you know what? I was a jerk, and I like all my old teammates, so, you know, all 100 plus of them, it just breaks my heart. Because it's so, it's a problem that we got to figure out a way for our country to embrace, you know, understand that mental illness is real, and that it's not something to be scoffed at or snickered at. It's real, and to take care of our fellow citizens, because it's everywhere right now. It's everywhere, as we've seen.
No doubt about it, and I appreciate your honesty on that, especially when you're talking about. We were talking about that before. It's not Democrat, Republican. It's a real issue that hopefully we will take seriously one day and not sweep under the rug, so to speak. But speaking of Andre Ware, he called the game, and I appreciate him. If you know him, tell him thank you, because we were very upset with some of the calls, and he was very candid about a 2-point conversion, and there was different calls that were not made. The play-by-play guy even said home cooking for Cincinnati. So I appreciate the fact that that's one thing that really hurts, is that I don't know what it's going to take for. I felt like an NC State fan, but
they always no. it up. that was a tough one. That y'all played a great game. I think that, you know, and Dre's a, you know, he's a pro. He's so so good at broadcasting and doing what he does. He was a great quarterback too.
Oh yeah.
And he's a great dude. You guys, I'll tell you, you know. Your record doesn't. Our records might be the same, but I think our years have been very different. I think that East Carolina is a great football team. The UCF game says so much to me. You know, the NC State game. I cried. I wanted you guys. You know, I'm cheering for you guys. You know, it's a. But that's football, you know, and that's what happens. But I think you guys have a nucleus, and you've got a great team there, and you've got some you got some winners, and that can carry on to next year. That can carry on.
No doubt.
Talking about a winner, and this guy has played an awful lot of football. That's Clayton Toon. He's already thrown for over 3,000 yards, 30 touchdowns. As opposed to just, I think, 8 picks. And then he's also ran for in excess of 400 yards and is the team's leading rusher. And talk about the season that Clayton's having.
So what I'll tell you about Clayton Toon is in October, he eclipsed 10,000 passing yards at the University of Houston. And he moved into the top three behind Case Keenum and Kevin Cobb. So he is a rare quarterback in an elite group up there. When I can talk about the top three quarterbacks and I don't mention Andre Ware or David Klingler, you know that's a special number and that's a special group of quarterbacks. So Clayton's a tough kid. We've talked about this a couple of, through the years. He got injured the past two seasons. 2 years ago, it was his left hamstring, and last year it was his right hamstring. So he wasn't perfect the past 2 years, and so he's really struggled through. Last year he sucked it up. He played. A lot of people didn't know it, but he had a hammy all season long, but he gutted it out. He toughed it out, and what he did is he became a great pocket passer last year. Is what he did. You translate that to this year. And he's the total package now. He can break the pocket if he needs to, but he's also patient enough to sit in there and throw the football. And, I think that, I hate to have to even reference it, but that the SMU game, he really took command on the offensive side of the ball. And really, if Houston could have just had like three stops, we would have won the game, but we couldn't stop anything. I mean, Literally, they scored seven. SMU scored seven times in a row. Dave, Bubba, like seven in a row, seven possessions in a row. So I don't think I've ever seen that in my life, and I've played in some wacky games too. So it's he's a field general. He's coming into his own, very confident, great touch on the ball, can throw the deep ball as well as anybody right now. That game-winning pass he threw to Matthew Golden this past week, it shouldn't have come down to the end of the game. But he took charge. That's what he does.
And one thing I want to mention too, first of all, Ted, two things. One, if he doesn't make it in your Hall of Fame at University of Houston, I don't know who does. Number one, I knew he was already there. I didn't know it was that elite company until you just told me. I didn't know it was that. I knew it was a lot of yards. But the other thing I'm looking forward to is, if you're a college football fan, this is probably one of the most underrated games. And you say, Dave, but you take Holton Ahlers versus him.
Holton Ahlers.
Two great quarterbacks. It's like a heavyweight fight, so to speak. And I hate to like hype it up a lot, but it's like, you know how in the NFL they'll say Aaron Rodgers against Tom Brady. It's kind of like that for us in college football, especially in our conference. These are probably arguably the two best quarterbacks in the league. They've got to be right up there.
Two best quarterbacks in the league. Best running back. You guys have the best running back in the league. You've got – there's so many things that we can talk about. The history of our two universities and the history. You and I will be talking in 5 years or 10 years about was the Ahlers against Toon matchup better than the Keenum against, and I'm drawing a complete blank here, against
Patrick Pinckney.
Pinckney, yeah.
No, after Pinckney, it was the quarterback from Houston, actually.
Shane Carden.
Gosh, sorry about that, Dave. I blew that one. I should have written it down. But anyway, the Shane Carden Case Keenum games. I mean, wow. So this is a matchup that's worthwhile. Your fans hopefully are going to be hyped up. This is a great – I mean, this is the kind of game you're going to see some fireworks. You're going to see some offense. Sort of buckle up. Let's see what happens.
This is Bubba, like the Wild Wild West, right? You have Houston. We're not in the West, obviously, or the Southwest Conference, but man, a lot of points, video game numbers, I think, on Saturday.
And rattling off rattling off some of these offensive numbers for both of these teams and the skill guys. Obviously, the Pirates have very talented and proven receivers like Isaiah Winstead and C.J. Johnson. But tell us about a guy you talk about how the quarterback matchup involves probably the two best quarterbacks in the league. Tell us about Nathaniel Dell, one of his top – or not one of his top target.
So the thing you got to know about Nathaniel Dell first off is don't let his size fool you. Everyone's going to look at his size and they're going to be like, oh, he's 5'10", 185. Come on, man. Like, that guy's – he's tiny. So he goes by the nickname of Tank. So when I hear Nathaniel, I almost forget like who he is. It's Tank Dell. And let me tell you about Tank Dell. Tank Dell is probably one of the most unique, explosive receivers that you're going to see in college football. He has the ability to go full speed and like 4.4 speed at full speed and stop on a dime and then re-accelerate to full speed within three steps, four steps. His stop and go ability is unique. It's so rare. I can't compare him to anybody. He looks a little bit like Marquez Stevenson, who plays with the Buffalo Bills, played at Houston, but Marquez was like 6 feet tall. So this guy's even smaller. And what he does, you'll notice he'll catch the ball and it looks like that DB's got a bead on him. It's going to hurt him. And at the last second, he'll like do a little, like a basketball move, like a pivot. Like he's going to go behind the back, like dribble behind the back. And so it glances the hit, and nobody gets a good hit on him. Nobody can hit this kid. Now, he's taken a couple hits for sure, you know, over the middle, deep stuff and all that kind of thing. But his short game ball control possession catches are unbelievable. And normally I would never say a kid that's, you know, somebody 5'10", 185 has got a chance in the NFL. This guy's going to be in the NFL. He's too unique. He's that kind of a guy. He's got that unique talent that's just – incredible.
And I know you said you could not think of someone to compare him to, so it's probably a stupid question, but for longtime Pirate fans, since you referenced Case Keenum, one of his top targets was Tyron Carrier, and he was a smaller receiver.
Tyron, great guy. He's a coach, by the way. He coached at Houston for a little while, coach of West Virginia. He's with the he's at Texas A&M Commerce right now, playing or coaching the receivers there. Great guy. Tyron was a track guy, and he had a great indoor track career and ran. He was really a track guy first. So when you think about Tyron, you're thinking about that kind of top end speed. And that's why he was such an incredible return man. I think he probably tied for all-time kick returns at Houston before Marcus Jones got here last year. So Marcus blew everybody's records out. But Tyron was that kind of guy. Tank's even different than him. I'm telling you, Tank is – you'll see what I mean, Bubba. When you see okay. Tank Dell out on the field, he's small. You're like – you're going to look at him, you're like, this kid? But, man, I'm telling you, he's crazy what he can do. And he never drops a pass. That's the other thing. He catches everything.
And that's very important. We have a lot of receivers, you know, like in the college level, that they're more worried about the hit or they're more worried about the yards after the catch. The first thing you have to do is catch the ball.
That's right.
No doubt about it. The one thing I will say is hopefully for East Carolina's sake, the biggest Achilles heel has been special teams this year. We even had the run back for a touchdown, they didn't call a block in the back, but, you know, American officials, I could comment on it. Coach Houston was, to say livid, he was the most out of character I've ever seen him for the Cincinnati game. But special teams has been really hurting us, especially one thing, Ted, that you can mention on the broadcast, you can share if you want, is the holder. Luke Larson has the same number as, it drives me crazy, Holden Other Show, as they say, Holden Ehlers, he's number 12. He's the punter, and why in the world he's done it all year long? You can talk about it. I don't care. You can use my name, but he literally spinning the ball around for laces when they kick. So when he kicks, now we're on our second kicker, and he's doing the same thing. I'm like, why in the world do you keep doing that? The kid is 30 years old. Like, I mean, there's no excuses for spinning the ball around for where all of a sudden the kicker's seeing the
kicking laces.
Yeah, I don't want to make excuses, but that's been
– look. It's a real deal, Dave. You're bringing up something that is a challenge for coaches, right? Starts off, you know, coaches, I'm sure, get very frustrated. He's trying to do the right thing, but you know, it's really about how holding's a really weird thing to be. And well, first off, kickers are strange and holders are even stranger, right? Like they're goofy guys. And I mean this with the bottom of my heart, like, you know, one of my best buddies in college was our kicker, Roman Anderson, and I'm great friends with the former football player at University of Houston, Billy Ray, Chuck Brown. His brother's Billy Ray Brown, who played in the PGA for years. And Chuck will tell you, he's like, the two weirdest people in the world are kickers and professional golfers. They're weird. They're just weird guys, right? Anyway, so, but you know, the thing about that, there is a technique, but it's, if you're not, I think quarterbacks are better holders than punters is what my theory is. And I would even say that a receiver might be a better holder than punter. Really? But today it seems like everybody has their punters holding. Everybody does. I don't know. I just can't understand it, but I'm with you on that. It can make the difference in the world for a kicker, and you know, extra points aren't even gimmies anymore. So I don't know.
Get this. So East Carolina, the only game that we were truly not in is the team, you know, of Tulane being in our conference. Tulane. That game we were not our – that's not our – that's not a game we'd love to have that game back. But the state game, we lose by 1 point. We lose by 3 in overtime to Navy. We lose in regulation by 2 points to Cincinnati. So it's crazy how, like you were saying, it's been very frustrating. And if you look at it, two of those three games came down to kicks. And when you don't, you know, the mechanics, I don't know the mechanics. I'm not trying to be a coach, even though I've coached high school ball. I've never coached college, never played at the level you have or Bubba. So I don't like, I'm not trying to judge. It's just frustrating to see how close we are from literally a 9-1 season to a 6-4. It's that razor
thing. It's that close. It is. It literally is like, you know, if the laces are here, if they're even not even 100% on the side, if they're just 3/4, that still gives enough for the foot to get on it and not have to push it.
That's been the biggest thing for us this year. I think Blake Carroll's done a nice job with the defense. Our defense, you know, used to be where we'd have to score. In the Lincoln Riley days, as much as we love Lincoln Riley, the defense, we really had to score a lot of points. If not, it was going to be a tough day, sure, for us. And Blake Harrell has been great for us. I think it's third season now. So the defense has been good. But what about you guys? As far as the defense is concerned, I don't want to bring up a tough topic, but we know as Pirate fans, we know about what defense is that you have to score a lot of points. So what do you have to do to improve the defense?
You know, Houston's going to have to figure out a pass defensive plan for this week. And the Cougars they're just beat up on defense. They're missing 6 starters right now. So, you know, there's no excuses, but and even last week, you know, they took it on the chin with, having the nickelback was injured last week. So we had to start a guy who's never started before, you know, so. I think that the big picture is that the pass rush and the front seven is going to kind of dictate the pace of play. And Doug Belk likes to pressure the quarterback. He likes to find ways to get to the quarterback, whether it's through zone blitzes or outright. He'll bring 6 if he needs to. The question is, like, how much pressure do you want to put on your back end, right? And when you're going against a quarterback that's completing 68% of his passes and averages 20 TDs and almost 300 yards a game in Holton Ehlers, you got to be careful, because you're not going after some chump. You're going after a guy that he's proven that he's tough under pressure, and he's not a small guy. So he's not going to fall down. Like, if you just touch him, he's not going to fall down. So I think it's going to be a tall task. Doug Belk's a great guy. He's done a great job over the past couple of years here. This year's been tough. His team is beat up, no question about it. And so they need that front seven's going to have to get after the quarterback, get back to the way they used to play defense, where they don't have to pressure. They don't need to. If you can pressure the quarterback without bringing 5, 6, or whatever, then you're in good shape. if you always are bringing six, you're exposing your back end, and that's going to be the, that's going to be the hard part.
No doubt, with the game, very excited about it, especially one of the questions I had for you, because I enjoy having you on so much, is the fact that, is there any way that we can keep our series going? I've been telling folks, Houston, Cincinnati are like between Conference USA, Independent, Conference USA, American. They'd love to keep the series going, and I, especially not only for football, but also obviously for basketball too.
Basketball too, yeah. I hope so. I hope we can find a way to keep it going. I know that Houston's going to be, you know, they'll have two, I think, or three slots open for non-conference. I'm not sure exactly. Next year's going to be a little bit weird because Texas is still in, and OU are still in the conference, so it's going to be great. I mean, we're excited about that. Don't get me wrong, but it's going to be a little weird. So, but I think once we get into our regular rhythm and our normal conference opponents, and it'll hopefully free up some time for us to renew our old rivalry, our friendly, you know, good old East Carolina, Houston. Let's go. Let's see where we can go.
That'll be great. Well, maybe one of these days we'll win a lot of games and they'll add us to help out with the East side with all the teams with Cincinnati, you have UCF now, West Virginia.
I like it.
Well, that was – As far as the SMU thing, do you think SMU gets in, being that you guys already are – you already have with Texas Christian? I mean, there's – I don't know if they get in or not, which I like them, but I don't know if they – they're another one that comes to mind with the old Southwestern Conference days, if they would get in the Big 12.
It's tough to say. I mean, you know, the schools, as friendly as we are, and maybe all of us that have kids, and you know, my dad went to A&M, I went to Houston, my mom went to TCU, my son goes to TCU. You know, that's the way it is in Texas. Like everybody goes to all the competitor schools, right? And that's what makes it great. But they don't play very nicely to each other when they're negotiating conference deals, is what I've learned through the years, Dave, and that you know. Where we helped, like when we originally got in the Southwest Conference, so way back, Texas helped us get in, right? They wanted Houston in. And then when it came time for Houston to try to get in a few years ago, they kept us out. They blocked us. They blocked us multiple times, even at the state legislature. So you know, I don't have a lot of love lost for Texas. I really celebrated when TCU beat them this past weekend. I was happy for my son and all that stuff. When you talk about TCU and SMU, you're kind of talking mortal enemies right there. Like they don't like each other at all. Yeah. And, you know, I can't begrudge TCU if they want to block that from happening. I understand. I get it. I've been on the other side. I've been on the blocked side. So I know what it's like, but it would be great. Like I said, Southwest Conference, I thought was the greatest conference ever. Did we fight each other? Yes. Did we have bad blood? Yes. But that's what made it so great, was you played that kid in high school and now I play him in college. You know what I mean? It was that kind of a thing. And it would be great. Some kind of, we're going to get to super. The other thing is we're going to get to super conferences. It's going to happen. 16 teams. It's going to happen. So the question is when, and we'll see.
Another team to add is obviously Memphis too. They're another one that I wonder if they have a shot, being their geography, you know, with their basketball would be great for the Big 12. Sometimes their football program is good, and sometimes it's kind of like hit or miss. They're another one that, and Tulane, I don't know if they would or not, but I guess that's another show. We'll never know until that happens, but. Did you see the? By the way, another thing. I know you guys are leaving the conference, but also on the schedule. Speaking of scheduling, the new American schedule came out last week, and there are a lot of us that are not to say that we're not happy is an understatement. With not having East and West conference divisions.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that.
I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but it was very disappointing to say the least.
Yeah, I was surprised that they didn't do the East-West. I think I think they're trying to – they want to give TV more options, I think, is probably what they want to do, and give TV the opportunity to help dictate matchups and all that kind of stuff. So it's a, I don't know, I'm just speculating there, but I think it's a bummer. It's definitely a bummer because that you get those natural sort of East-West, you know, rivalry. You kind of get your local rivals, and then you go play each other in a conference championship. And you know, it, I think that's been good for, by the way, I think for Houston, it was good to have UCF over in the East, right? I thought that was good. You know, they were, we rotate through and we get them every, you know, every 2 years, whatever it is, but at home. But yeah, I was surprised.
No doubt about it. You know, with us, with we're talking about that with maybe one day we'll get in. It's just been very, it's been very tough. And you guys know how it feels like, well, say with Conference USA, it was kind of like a whole bunch of independent schools coming together because to form a conference.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah, no, it Conference USA was, we made the best of it. We all did. We all made the absolute best of it. We fought through, I'm glad you got. I'm glad we got out of there.
Now, Ted, let's take going back to this matchup this weekend, and we talk about the improvement of the Pirate defense and how it's the best defense that we've had at East Carolina since the Skip Holtz years, no doubt about it. And what that has allowed this football team and program to do. So. With what you've seen of Blake Harrell's defense and what you've seen of the Houston offense, I think I saw what you've allowed about 18 or 19 sacks. You know, how is that offensive line protected? Because I know that Clayton Toon is the leading rusher with just over 400 yards.
It's crazy, Bubba, that our quarterback is our leading rusher, right? I mean, that doesn't sound right, especially if we're a passing team, considering how much passing we've been doing. But yeah, it just kind of shows you the unfortunate situation with our backfield. You know, we had Alton McCaskill, who was our super freshman last year, tore his knee up in spring ball. So he had an ACL, and so he's missed the season. And so it's been sort of trying to figure out who could step in and help out. So you had kind of the combination of Brandon Campbell and Stacy Sneed, who's been kind of the sort of the puncher versus the runner. Stacy Sneed's a smaller, quicker back, has really carried the load recently because Brandon Campbell's been a little bit dinged up. Brandon Campbell is a transfer from he's from Houston, the Houston area, from Clear Lake, but he transferred back from he spent a year out at USC. But you know, I'm a numbers guy, right? So when I look at the rushing defense that ECU, you guys are only, you know, you're giving up 3.5 yards per rush, only 120 a game. I mean, that's, you know, you've given up 9 rushing TDs. That's solid defense. That's solid football. Nothing to be, nothing to be, unhappy with there. And I think that, you know, that you've got that. You've also got a pass defense that's pretty strong, 260 yards per game, something like that. But, you know, to me, Houston has to focus on themselves when it comes to offense because they've got the ability to execute. They have a really well-oiled machine that if they're smart and they play discipline, when Houston gets in trouble is when they have big-time penalties. And I mean like offsides, holding, all those stupid penalties that frustrate everybody. You guys only have 31 yards of penalties. The Pirates only have 31 yards of penalties per game. Houston has over 75, basically 74.9. So 75 yards per game in penalties. And that's not sustainable for the Cougs. It really comes down to the past couple of weeks. They've got it under control. They've got it under discipline. They've been very disciplined, Bubba. But, you know, so if Houston, if they self-destruct, that combined with a good ECU defense is going to make it more difficult for Houston to be successful. So those things you got to keep control over.
And you talk about that discipline, and in addition to the Pirates having been very disciplined, just 30 yards per penalties per game over the last 4 games since that loss at Tulane, East Carolina has not turned the football over. Meanwhile, they forced 7 turnovers, so plus 7 against the toughest part of the schedule against Memphis, UCF, BYU, and Cincinnati.
I'm telling you. That's why I'm like this season. I look at East Carolina's year and I look at Houston's year, and we got the same record, 6-4. But I mean, you guys beat a good BYU team like that. That says a lot to me right there. A UCF team like UCF, that's a big win, you know. So like the reality is that Houston's got their hands full every week because of the injuries and because of the problems. It's just kind of, you know, usually at the end of the season, teams are really kind of beat up and dinged up. I don't see that with East Carolina. I see a healthy team. I see a good team. And I see a team that's kind of on the rise right now and not a team that's struggling. So, I shoot you straight, guys. You guys are looking good.
In UCF, you referenced the Knights and how that win impressed you. The Knights and Cougars are explosive offenses, but in different ways. UCF, yes, they can throw the football well, but it's more so with the run and what they do there with John Rhys Plumlee, Mikey Keen, and a lot of skill talent. With Houston, it's more so throwing the football, as we've discussed already. East Carolina, in that game against UCF, they really controlled the football, kept it out of the Knights' hands, and when UCF did have the football, the Pirates forced four turnovers. I referenced Clayton Toon with eight picks. How many times have the Cougars turned it over via fumbles?
Yeah, you know, so the Cougars doing well on fumbles. It hasn't been a year of big fumbling because Clayton is our primary rusher right now. Clayton Toon is the leading rusher on the team, and because we've had sort of multiple running backs in the backfield, there hasn't been that risk that you would normally see on a team. I just think it comes down to how you look at, the interception thing. Clayton's been really accurate. I know that he's had a few interceptions, but like over the past 2 weeks, personally, I look at them and I see a receiver tipping a ball right into the hands of the defender 2 weeks in a row. That kind of thing can't happen. You can't do that. And when it becomes a habit, it's kind of like, okay, I'm not going to blame that on Clayton. Clayton put the ball in his hands. Like, you know, so you see things like that. You can kind of understand how the turnovers happen. I don't think the turnover thing is going to be something that – I think both teams are disciplined on turnovers. To me, that's not going to be something that I'm worried about with Houston. But I also know that ECU is pretty safe with the football. The things that I look at when I'm kind of breaking down a game, I look at sort of your – you know, how many yards are you giving up on offense? How many yards are you giving up on defense? Average per play, all those types of things. Here's an interesting stat for you, Bubba, that I kind of see it as really curious. So ECU on the pass side, ECU gives up 11.6 yards per catch. Houston averages 11.6 yards per catch. Things like that kind of stick out to me when I'm trying to compare. So what does that mean? Does that mean that if ECU gives up what they average, is Houston got – do they have the advantage? Because Houston averages that, and Houston has – you know, these are the things that you got to figure out. How does that tip the scale in one direction or another? And I think you kind of take – you know, I'm looking at the offense, especially the pass stats, and they're very, very similar like that. I think you just say, look, it's a wash. It's an absolute wash. And what you got to see is discipline, and you got to see execution. The teams that execute the best with the fewest number of mistakes are going to win. And that's why I brought up the penalties thing. Houston's been a little sloppy early in the season. They've gotten a lot better. Houston was averaging like 100 yards per game in penalties for the first few weeks. It was unbelievable. They've got it down now under control. But still, that to me can be a difference maker. And then, of course, special teams. You know, don't forget special teams. Tank Dell is a dangerous return man. Keep an eye on this young man, Matthew Golden, number 10, true freshman. He's a very dangerous return man as well.
One thing I want to mention is this is Bubba pointed this out, so I'm giving him credit, not me, Ted, because he's a numbers guy. Remember where I went to school, Ted. But the last four games, East Carolina has not turned over the ball, and we're +7 in the turnover margin there with the last four teams we played. And that's for those that don't know East Carolina football, that's a huge victory for us right there to have a +7 in the last four games.
Takeaways are huge. Takeaways give, you know, think about every takeaway. It's so much a part of football today. It's become so important because it's another shot for your offense. It's another shot.
The Pirates have been very tough defensively in the red zone.
You referenced that NC State game. I know you're familiar with the goal line stands in that one. They kept the Pirates in it and allowed them to nearly come out on top against the Wolfpack. But what's the Cougars? Yes, they've struggled defensively on the whole. So has that been also the same in the red zone?
Yeah, the Cougars are kind of all over the map. It's been an interesting, you kind of look at their what they'll do, offensively. The red zone scores, the Cougars are pretty strong right now, and you kind of they're up in the 90% range. It's somewhere around 44 out of 50 attempts, something like that, is where their red zone scores are. And their total sort of their red zone touchdowns is at like almost 70%. Now, again, let's not forget that, that SMU game with the 63 points is going to kind of change things a little bit on your math there. But overall, the Cougars do a really good job in the red zone. That's why I'm saying I feel like these are two really evenly matched teams, Bubba. I feel like I know you guys have a strong defense. You guys have done a good job in the red zone. Houston's defense is pretty strong in the red zone too, by the way. They're holding teams out. So it's always these matchups that are really well balanced like this. You got to look for that one thing that's different, or that one thing that stands out. And I'm not sure there is a single thing. I think that, it's going to be a quarterback battle. Like, let's be honest, you got two great quarterbacks. Which guy is going to be the man? It's going to be one of the two. So you've got that side of it. You got mistakes. You keep the mistakes. Is it going to be a mistake-free game? Is it going to be a heavy game with heavy mistakes? All that kind of thing. So that's kind of where I'm leaning towards those things. And less towards your third down conversion, red zone conversion, or all those. Those are important stats too. But I think the teams are pretty balanced there.
Ted, you mentioned how the Cougs have six starters out, and that's something that has obviously been a tall task to overcome. Can you be more specific there? What positions are those guys? Has it primarily been on the defensive side?
Absolutely. So the receiving core, even though we still have Tank Dell, Matthew Golden was injured for a couple of weeks. He had a rib cage injury. Houston also had a young man to transfer, Joseph Manjack from USC. Played receiver at USC last year, went to Tomball High School, which is in North Houston, decided to come home. So we actually had two kids from USC transfer to come to Houston, which was awesome. Guys that are Houston kids that are coming home. Manjack made a one-handed catch in that first game of the season. He's a big explosive guy, kind of a possession guy, but really a great receiver. And we lost him for the season. So a guy like that, you just can't replace that, right? So Houston's been working hard with their number twos and their number threes. They've had great production recently out of their tight end crew. They'll come in with two tight ends from time to time. But, I think that you think about this receiving core that Houston has, and you've got an unflappable Tank Dell, number one. You've got Matthew Golden, I mentioned him, number 10. You're going to see another guy, number 8, Keyshawn Carter. He's kind of an unsung hero in this offense because he's a big possession guy. He's a big guy. About 6 feet tall, has great hands. And then another guy that's a transfer from West Virginia, Sam Brown, has really emerged over the past 2 weeks as a big-time playmaker. He had double-digit catches against SMU. So that's kind of been those are the highlight guys that you're going to see a lot coming from in the game. And we'll see. At running back, I think I mentioned Brandon Campbell and talking about Stacy Sneed. Tazon Henry, who got injured early in the season, number 4, he's been a great back for us the past couple of years, transferred from Texas Tech. He got injured, but he's back as well. So, three back rotation right now in the backfield, but those key receivers that I mentioned are the guys that are playmakers.
And Ted, one final thing I have for you. I know you've been generous for your time tonight. Appreciate it as always. Coach Logan was talking about, former East Carolina head football coach, was talking about the summer. He did a radio interview, a local interview, and he was talking about the very fact of how our team now reminds of when he was coaching, because every single game is going to come down to the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter game. It come down to the final possession. Like, sounds like coach speak. But he's talking about that, and it's funny how he's a very smart man, but it's funny how our season's played out that way, very similarly.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think that you know, not to sound like the big whiner, but man, injuries get you, and the injury thing has been tough. I think that that D line that Houston started the season with looks completely different right now than it did. So, really lost it. Just lost some guys that were, you know, leaders out there, and it's hard to replace the upperclassmen when they get hurt as well. So I think, you know, if you look at the two teams, we're a pretty good mirror image of each other in many ways. And I think that you guys probably have the edge a little bit defensively right now. And I think that Houston might have a passing advantage, but those are the only advantages on each other that I can call out. You know, maybe we haven't talked much about special teams. That's something we could it's a pretty evenly matched game.
Yeah, that's, you read my mind, Ted. That's where I was headed next. And Dave referenced on the Pirates special teams, how we did allow a kickoff return for a touchdown on Friday against Cincinnati. Even though we did get clipped and, you know, blocked right in the middle of the back with the guy breaking down to make a tackle, but still should have made the play. And the PAT field goal team has been the primary source of our special teams woes. And then a time or two on the punt team has caused some – or been a cause for some concern as well. But tell us about those special teams.
Yeah, so, you know, I mentioned Houston has a nickelback named Jace Rogers, and he was injured last week. He couldn't play, unfortunately. He's also a big-time return man for the University of Houston. So Jace is he's kind of the explosive guy. He has a kickoff return for a touchdown this year. He averages 40 yards per return. He's kind of a big play guy, as I mentioned. Also, I mentioned that Matthew Golden is a true freshman receiver, but he's doing pretty well. He's averaging 23 yards per return. But then you start looking at punt returns, and it's really Tank Dell. Tank Dell is the guy, the receiver. He's dangerously explosive, averages about 12 yards per return. His longest is 35. He's waiting to break one, but it starts with the return game. The other thing I would say is, you know, Houston's had pretty experienced with overtimes this year. I've seen more onside kicks recovered than I've ever seen in my life by Houston. They've got a tight end named Christian Trahan, who's 6'4", 245, and he's that jumper guy on the onside kick. I think we've had four this year that we've recovered. You kind of think about that in your special teams mix up. Then you start looking at your kickers, right? And I talked a little bit earlier about kickers, and Houston's got a good punter in Lane Wilkins. He's an Australian rules style punter. So, and he's an Aussie. So he's an older guy. He's a little different because a lot of the Aussie punters like to do the backward spiral, kind of like that kick, but Lane can literally put his foot into it. His longest kick of the year is about 67 yards. So he's no stranger to some big punts. Houston's had two kickers that have kicked this year, by the way, Kyle Ramsey and Bubba Baxa. And Bubba is a transfer from University of Miami down in Florida. We'll see, right? Special teams is a critical component of the game, and I feel good about the special teams.
And Johnny Robertson chimes in on Facebook saying he will not miss Marcus Jones.
Marcus Jones was a special talent. He's with the New England Patriots, actually. He's playing for Bill Belichick. That should say a little bit about Marcus Jones.
No doubt about it. It's going to be great. I tell you what, this game has got a lot going for it. Obviously, disappointed that it was not on one of the linear networks for ESPN, for ESPN Plus. I'm not a snob. We have a lot of people in the fan base that don't understand streaming. I'm not that guy. But as far as the two programs, I'll just say for ESPN, that was a little disrespectful, considering especially the two quarterback play. You guys, I love the radio broadcast. So, you know, I'm a radio guy. So I'm going to be the what there I do go. Is I have the TV sound turned down and I listen to the radio broadcast, and it drives people crazy that know me, because they're like, that play is not synced up. And I said, well, you can do it certain ways where you can. But how can people, before we let you go, how can people listen to your broadcast? And again, thank you so much for spending like an hour with us plus.
Yeah, no, of course, man. You guys are awesome. Anytime, for sure. Now, so the Learfield Houston IMG network is streamed on the Varsity Network. It's an app, free app. You can download and listen to the game for free. If you're in H-Town, you can listen to me on AM 950 KPRC AM radio, and or follow me on social media at Party Time, party underscore time.
Ted, we did have one more question for you from Conan on YouTube. Addressing Houston, UCF, and Cincinnati moving on to the Big 12. Very quickly, where do you see them in the pecking order in that league next year?
That's a great question. That's actually a great question. I think that I've seen a lot of Big 12 football this year because my son plays, as I mentioned, my son is a quarterback at TCU. So I've seen a lot of their football games. You know, Big 12 is good football. Houston played a great game against Texas Tech this past year. Texas Tech has had a up and down season. They looked red hot at the beginning of the year. Houston should have beaten them. Overtime, we gave up 4th and 21, if you can believe that. We gave up a first down on 4th and 21. The first year's – look, I'm going to be a realist. I think the first year is going to be a little bouncy for all three schools. I think that Cincy and Houston are both down this year. I thought that UCF was okay this year, but I think they're just showing that they're regular. They're human too, like everybody else, right? It's the end of the season. You're dinged up. But I think that ultimately, and I'll throw BYU in there, I think ultimately it's going to strengthen that league. I think that next year is going to be an interesting year because Texas and Oklahoma are still there. Oklahoma's in trouble right now, guys. Like, if they can't hang in their own conference, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? SEC. But Houston, we've beaten Oklahoma before. We beat them in Houston a couple of years back. You know, Houston was not afraid of anybody. But I'm just glad that Houston's going to be back in the conversation again and finally get to play those old rivals that we used to have back when I was playing.
It's going to be great. Thank you, Ted, so much. And hopefully we can play an old conference foe in Houston very soon. Thank you so much. Hope to see you on Saturday. Thank you for your time tonight, man, as always.
Always, Dave. You and Bubba the best. Thanks, guys.
You are. Good night. Bye-bye. Appreciate Ted very much there. I know he spent a lot of time with Bubba, but that's why we love having him on. He does a great job there with Houston Radio and being as the analyst, and very excited for this game. By the way, last week I checked in with the ticket office. They'd sold over 40,000 a week ago, more. That's tickets sold. So let's see if we can – I don't know where it is now. If I had a guess right now, Bubba, you're the numbers guy. I'm going to go with the average. I'm going to say we're at 43,000 and some change. I hope it's more than that. But that's where I'm going with how many tickets are sold, and we still have a few days to go. So if there's any way possible we could get like 45, 47,000 in that range, is what I'm hoping for. But I will say 43,000 tickets sold. I don't know how that translates to butts and seats, but certainly we'll be at our average come Saturday. Again, get your tickets, ecupirates.com. Or you can call 1-800-DIAL-ECU and talk to our good friends there. Coleman Spain, appreciate him. In fact, Bubba, we were talking about, let's make Coleman have a very stressful week, and he would be the first to tell you he takes pride in his work and selling out tickets. He does a great job, ECU alum, and all the folks there in the ticket office, they do a wonderful job. Let's give them a stressful week. Let's sell out the place. I would love that for senior day. Think about Holton Ahlers, all the great seniors who could have transferred. They could have gone other places, but they stayed with us, and through thick and thin. So let's do that and celebrate that. All right. All right. Let's go to the Mike Houston, right?
Yeah, Mike Houston, as well as some of the seniors, Holton Ahlers, Miles Berry, Xavier Smith, met with the media today. Today being Tuesday, and of course, we have those comments in their entirety on our YouTube channel, but we're wanting to bring you some of the highlights of what Coach Houston had to say about the outgoing seniors in their final game at Dowdy-Ficklin, as well as Holton Ahlers, who has rewritten the record book. And yes, he played in more games than some Pirate quarterbacks, but what a tremendous career for Holton, and nothing but respect for that young man and the way he represented the Pirates on and off the field, and the way he carries himself and what he's done to get this program back to where it is and where it will go in the future. So let's go first to those comments from Mike Houston about the East Carolina seniors and what it's going to be like on senior night with this class. It's meant so much with this program's return to prominence.
Well, holding up. Coach, just what do you think emotions will be like Saturday pregame? I mean, every senior day is emotional, but it just feels like this group, especially the guys, the 6-year seniors, maybe it'll even be more emotional than given what they have done with this program.
Well, I think that's, and that's why I'm going to talk to them about, that group about, before then is just, this, you got to still try to keep your emotions in check to a degree. I mean, it's certainly a chance to honor them. And, I still remember my senior day, we all do. But it's, you want to make sure that you play, play the game that you envision on senior day. So I think it's going to be a mixture of, managing those emotions and then, using those emotions to fuel you. Certainly I think this day will be very emotional for our fan base. I think it, it'll be emotional for me for the same reasons. It's just, this group has achieved a lot, and, I'll never forget them. And they'll always, be a part of Pirate football and a just a great story with Pirate football.
Coach, what were your first thoughts when you heard what happened at Virginia? And can you imagine anything like that? How is that program is trying to cope with that? Because football is such a family type deal.
It's horrific. I mean, it's devastating. I mean, I can't imagine going through that. It's painful enough to hear about it and watch it. But, you spend so much time with these kids and you become so attached to them. And, it would be very similar to your own children. And I think it's a parent's worst nightmare is something like this happening. And so, our thoughts and prayers, have been with them all week. What they're going through, you shouldn't be going through it. And it's a terrible story. And so just I hope that they're able to, process this appropriately, honor the lives of those that were lost. We continue to pray for the two young men that are still hospitalized and, hope that they can navigate that as best possible. But, there's really just, it's hard to put into words, so.
With Holton in particular, what he's meant to this program, and how much has he helped you through your time and turn around this program? He's going to leave here basically every record passing-wise, American and at ACU. What has he meant to you?
Well, I think, one, just I'm very proud of him. And, when he decided to come back for this his last year of eligibility, you always want to see guys maximize their potential. And I think just – the work that he did in the off season and, the way he's prepared himself this year has allowed him to elevate his level of play to a point where I think, he is playing at the highest level of his career. And I think maximizing his God given ability. And so, one, I'm just very proud of him. Two, he's just a special kid. And, we're obviously very close, and I care about him tremendously. And I'm just thankful that we've had our time together. And so just excited to see him finish his career here. Hope Saturday is, you know, another great performance for him, but also for us. But, you know, he has meant a lot to our football program, a lot to me.
And there you had the thoughts of East Carolina head football coach Mike Houston on the senior class as a whole, as well as his relationship with East Carolina quarterback Holton Ahlers. Holton spoke to the media as well, and he was asked specifically, you know, about his time as a Pirates and seeing the program go from where it was when he arrived prior to that 2018 season and where it currently stands as a program that is, you know, on the verge of competing for championships once again and getting back to the level it was all those years ago when Shane Carden, who will be in town this weekend, was behind center, as well as back to his childhood during the Skip Holtz years. And hear those comments from Holton.
Well, Holton, senior day Saturday, how much are you trying to maybe compartmentalize that, but also kind of let it soak in a little bit?
Yeah, it's kind of tough to do both. There's obviously a lot of my mental aspect of it's going to preparing for Houston. But at the same time, I mean, I'm just going to enjoy this ride that I've had. That's kind of what I've done this whole time. It has probably hit me more than I thought it would earlier in the week. But, yeah, I mean, one more game in Dowdy, and, you know, I'm just thankful for this ride that I've been on and that these seniors have been on to change this program. So, obviously, this week's going to be an emotional one for a lot of us. Just when you spend so much time at a place and at a time changing it, and when we got here, it wasn't the way it is now. So, just super thankful for that. And, yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a tough week.
At the beginning of the year, I remember you telling a story about you and Miles talking about changing the Pirate program. How well do you think you accomplished that through the 5 years there?
Yeah. I mean, our goal coming in this thing is to get back to bowl eligibility. And then, obviously, return for our fifth year. We want to get to a conference championship, which we really didn't get done. But, I mean, everything happens for a reason. We're still just proud to be here. We're thankful. You know, I said it last interview I had is, you know, every time we step on that practice field and every time we step on that game field, I mean, it's a blessing. And these seniors know that. You know, that's what's special about this class is we appreciate, you know, the times that we've come from. I mean, there was times when we were struggling to win one game. We have the opportunity to win nine this year. And obviously it starts this week with Houston. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, walking in that locker room, it's totally different than it was when we got here.
How do you think it's going to feel walking into Dowdy last time?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. It's definitely going to be emotional. Especially for me and Miles, and obviously senior day and all that's going to be emotional, but you know, me and Miles walk out there for the captain's walk one last time, that'll definitely be emotional. And it's been a great group of guys, you know, that I came in with and that have stuck through hard times. And you know, in the age of the transfer portal, it's really easy to just go to another school that's winning maybe right now, especially when we were younger. But, you know, we stuck through it and wanted to see this place win. So,
that Miles and Expo said is that it's fun again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, practice is fun again. Just going in that locker room. I mean, just the mood of everyone. It's just you can tell that people appreciate where we've come from, especially these older guys. And like I said, I mean, when we first got here, it was tough to win one game, you know, and now we're in every game and have a chance to win every single game. And obviously in football and in life, you know, everything's not always going to go your way. Just appreciative to be in the situation that we're in for sure.
Speaking of emotion, earlier today, Coach Houston had his press conference talking about you. He got emotional.
Yeah.
What does he mean to you?
Yeah, a lot. You know, he's the one behind all of this, you know, behind all that. He didn't even really recruit this senior class or this fifth year class. But he's certainly the one that changed it. You know, he's the one that, you know, put in the program for us to change it, and we bought into it early. It was hard, you know, that first year or two. It was super hard to even go to practice and to go out there. And I mean, there was times when, you know, a lot of us probably shouldn't even been playing, you know, with our bodies hurt and stuff like that. But that's just football, and we gave everything we could for this university, and he certainly has too.
Holton, you've faced your fair share of criticism early in your career, especially as a hometown guy. You probably had too much pressure on your shoulders unfairly. I guess, how did you maybe find a way to overcome that, not listen to that, and
and reached this point, because I don't know if you ever thought about what it would be like playing at another school, but you stuck it out here. And
yeah, succeeded. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I knew it sounds crazy, but I knew when I was 17 when I committed here that it was going to be – I mean, you go into a program that's losing, there's going to be criticism, especially when you're playing the quarterback, especially being in the hometown. So I knew going in that I was going to face some hard days, and probably didn't know how hard it was going to be. But you know, once I got older, and you know, I just kept, you know, the circle around me, that, you know, the people that have, you know, helped raise me, and my friends that have been with me, you know, since I was a kid, you know, I just kept them close, and, you know, trusted in them, and they trusted in me, and just belief that, you know, if you keep your head down and work hard, then everything else will work out. And certainly that's what I did, is just, you know, kept my head down and, you know, didn't listen to the outside noise, whether it was praise or criticism. And just, you know, saw the brighter days ahead. You know, we're at those days now, and bowl eligible for 2 years in a row now is a big accomplishment for this program. From, you know, when we walked in, it was, you know, we hadn't been to a bowl game in a while. So, yeah.
All right, comments from Holton Ahlers. Press conference.
Before the game.
It's going to be a great Saturday at 2. And that'll be we're going to let you know that we have a fair basketball time for Hampton tomorrow. And so make sure you do that. All right, I'm David. Good night,
everybody.
Go Pirate.
Why not copy that? Everybody in the stands go bananas, speed lab, but we don't hold back. Every foot, every yard, every first down, every touchdown with the cannons blast. Get it on, get it all, get the wave going.